The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Unfiltered
opinion. I'm Jimmy Moya.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to the Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to yet another episode of Insider Exchange. Welcome to Market Matters, live streamed for your viewing pleasure. Back on Mondays, we did a bit of a Tuesday thing. We're back on Mondays, but we happen to like Tuesdays better. We've concluded Tuesdays are better for us. We'll revisit that conversation and you'll be happy to know we're back. We got our names back after much deliberation, much fighting. We managed to get our names back. On the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the developments out of Washington in two parts. Part one, Market Matters, we're going to be taking a look at the collapse of South Africa, or at least that's how it's been positioned by the Wall Street Journal. And then we're also going to take a look at the other side of it in the deep dive. Last week, we dove into Trump's triple B's. This week, we're going to dive into some other legislation that's been passed in the US, mainly around the crypto space in the form of the Clarity Bill, the Genius Bill, and one other bill. We'll get to that in a second, but that's, of course, for the deep dive. For the investor insights, we're going to be taking a look at earnings season and what we're expecting from that, and we've got a very interesting unfiltered opinion to share with you at the end of the show, so stick around for that. If you are joining us on live stream, if you're joining us on our TikTok stream, welcome guys. Thank you for taking time out of the morning. Hopefully you didn't miss your lectures to do that, or that we're not disturbing you from your workplace. We will get into Market Matters and we will get into some of how the JSE has been moving in early trade, but before we kick things off, I think it would be remiss of us to not ask the important questions of the week. Si, have you been to any Coldplay concerts recently?
No. I'm trying to think if I've ever been. No. And certainly not with any side hustles.
There we go. That's all we needed to know. That's all we needed to check. It's important, folks, when you go to these sorts of events, that you are mindful that you're in a public space. It's difficult to regulate public spaces. I mean, it's a public space after all. Let's get into Market Matters. Let's get into the surprising article put out over the weekend by the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that South Africa's collapse has been mispriced.
Yeah, mispriced South Africa's collapse.
I think collapse is a very serious word to use in this context. I mean, to say
actually,
that a country collapsed, or a country is about to collapse, or on the verge of collapse. Yes, South Africa has its own problems. We're not denying that we have problems. But to come out and publicly say to the world, because let's be honest, something like the Wall Street Journal is consumed around the world, that there's an impending collapse about to take place in South Africa, that's a very alarming, I don't want to say alarming, I think it's a very deliberate title as well.
It certainly is. And the chap who wrote it's a senior research analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Max Meslish, perhaps, and other bits and pieces, etc. So, firstly, the collapse part, I agree. Are we on a slow slide? Yeah, I mean, have been since, I don't know.
94? 2000,
no.
Maybe?
No, I was going back to 1906, maybe. When was the first Land Act? 1911?
Okay.
Maybe the wars in what was then Natal, the Zulu-English wars, where England just decided, oh, we like that land. Maybe when the English decided that we should grow maize rather than sorghum and millet, which are way more drought resistant, as opposed to maize. When drought happens, people starve. I mean, like We can go back hundreds of years. So collapse, I think, is taking it far. I mean, they raise some good points. And I don't think there's much here that we're unaware of. Yeah, some of it is, you know, currency volatility. That's not so much because
it's
of
not
us.
New.
Yeah, it's not new. And it's not because of us. It's because if we've got the liquidity, if you want to trade an EM basket, it's just easier to trade the ZAR. And we kind of more or less give you that, although Turkish lira hit worst levels ever against the USD over this morning. So T's and C's. But a lot of this smacks more of a Trump South Africa story rather than a South Africa world story. It's, for example, the, you know, wanting to target individual South Africans. Mentioned Gwede Mantashe, Naledi Pandor. I think those were the only two things that, and a lot of, and here they're talking around Iran, they're talking around Israel and the International Court of Justice, things which the Biden administration, in some cases, Court of International Justice, disagreed with, but let it slide. Iran, well, they were trying to renegotiate the deal that Trump tore up in his first term. So it's kind of shift, depends on the shift in American politics. To be clear, what they talk about, they're not wrong. I mean, currency volatility, nothing new about that. Corruption, nothing new about that. Police ministers being put on leave. Man, we've had, was Jackie Celebi, no, he was chief of police. He went to jail.
Well, we've impeached judges, we've fired ministers, we've rehired ministers, we've done a lot of things. And I think that's quite the point as well, is around what's being said. Let's perhaps just put a bit more color around some of the things that have been mentioned. You've touched on some of them, a lot of them Trump administration related, things like the youth unemployment was mentioned as well, frequent power and water outages. I don't know if they're frequent, because as a South African living in South Africa, we've actually seen less of those over time. And yes, Eskom is burning through a lot more diesel, but the lights are staying on, and they have been on for quite some time. The water outages we're resolving. The water corruption tenders and all of that, that's another story. We'll come back to that at some point, right? But the failure of state-owned enterprises, that's nothing new. We're supposedly addressing that. So, yes.
And some of those are getting better. I mean, SAA, okay, they lost money, but they, you know, they kind of functional.
It was an accounting error. Oh, wow. Well, yeah, okay. Let's perhaps pause for a second and dive into that in a bit of detail. So, SAA comes out with last year, last financial year, we've turned a profit for the first time in however many years. Great, lovely. And then you come out the following year and say, oh, that was an accounting error. It wasn't really a profit. Or now we're back in a loss because of the accounting error.
What did God make auditors for?
We have four big audit firms. We have some smaller ones.
Who
the audit firm is? Yeah. Oh, wait. Before we Google it, do you want to take any... Oh, well, it won't be. It'll be the Auditor General. It's a public entity, right? Yeah.
Ooh, that's embarrassing.
It'll be the AGSA. So it wouldn't be a private audit firm. But if it were to be a private audit firm, I would want to take bets on who you think it would be. Perhaps we'll put that out as a poll to the auditors and accountants out there. If it were to be audited by a private audit firm, which one do you think would give us the results that we got? Let's not say anything disparaging around our audit firms. They are trying their best. But yes, back to, I mean, things like Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent not showing up to South Africa's G20. That actually turned out to be a blessing in disguise for South Africa.
We actually got to communicate.
That's it, right?
Which kind of stuck it to the US. We basically said two things, right? The World Trade Organization is important.
Yes.
And central bank independence is important. Yes, looking at you, Orange.
And that was quite interesting, because going into Friday as well, when the G20 or the finance track of the G20 kind of wrapped up in Zimbabwe, that happened last week. And the wrap up was everybody sitting there saying, guys, we're actually going to move forward with some stuff. And the message there was, yes, South Africa managed to do something that many people haven't been able to do over the last couple of years, is actually kind of bring people together.
Yeah.
And that's something that we do quite often. We're able to do that in the right circumstances. But nobody's shying away from the problems that we have, right?
Yeah,
and we have many of those problems. But to sit back and kind of just say, when you lump them all together at once, it does look like a dire situation. But I don't think the country's collapsing.
No, I agreed 100%. I mean, you say like we're friends with China, Turkey, and Qatar. I mean, who gave...
So we can't have friends now.
Who gave the orange man a jet?
Qatar.
Oh, Orcs.
Who gave him a $1 billion deal for a Trump Tower in the UAE?
No, I mean, our friendship with Russia, I think we're in the wrong side of history with that. I mean, you invade a sovereign nation, you should like have some words. But
that's been a friendship that's been in place for longer than we can remember.
And we've had weird friends for a very, very long time for a bunch of reasons.
That's not a new thing.
I mean, we threw Taiwan under the bus in 98. I remember, well, arguing, I was going to say with Mandela, but it wasn't arguing. I was just did because, of course, he wasn't there because he didn't care what I thought. But we threw Taiwan under the bus to be friends with China. To be like quite clear, remember when Pelosi went to Taiwan and there was like, ooh,
yes,
don't upset China.
And she just showed up at random.
Yeah, and telling us that Julius Malema has pledged to arm Hamas. Julius Malema has pledged lots of things. Wasn't he going to build a school and all of this? I mean, there's someone on Twitter who keeps on popping up and saying, yo, Julius, you've said these things over 10 years and you've done zero. I mean, et cetera, et cetera. I think collapse is wrong. Are we on a slow slide down? Yes, I think we have been for hundreds of years. I also think that they make another mistake, which is if we're talking our market and they say missed prices, South Africa's collapse, I'm assuming that is in a lot of sense the market in a sense, because they talk about Wall Street mispricing South Africa's collapse.
So effectively, they're saying
5% of our market is earning offshore anyway. It's not SA Inc.
So I suppose mispricing the collapse could be giving too much credit to the local market amidst an impending collapse, which again is a very serious assumption that there is going to be an impending collapse. Speaking of that market and its impending collapse, I want to take a look at where the market is open today, where we're trading at the moment. And I'm just trying to see if there's anything that's really concerning the market at the moment around this. No, we're at all-time highs again. So goes to show you how much of that article was read through.
Sorry, Mr. Max. It is, you know what, and it's easy to, particularly from a distance, to write nice, big, sensational articles and be exciting. And we're not for a second suggesting that there are not real problems in
South Africa. We're not perfect. We're not saying we're perfect.
By long ways, but, you know, cost the first stone in war. What's that? I can't even remember what it is.
That and something about glass houses and stones
and jets from Qatar.
The jet from Qatar, but I mean, if we're going to talk about the economic situations,
the $16 million shakedown of CBS and
$40 trillion of debt. I mean, we can write an article as well if we wanted to.
Well, actually, just thinking, maybe the world is mispricing the US's collapse. Someone out there write that one.
Why not?
JSC, Maud Street, is mispricing the US collapse.
Because
we're not making light of it.
No, we're not.
Clear.
We're not. There are some serious issues here.
This is a sensational piece. So the one line, these moves reflect South Africa's pariah-like status in Washington. Yes, but that
in
also...
In Washington,
and
being
reflects,
the operative word.
It reflects the current administration in Washington.
There we go, right? So it's a very biased view on where it is that
very
we
light
stand.
View.
James says, we could throw a stone at the new plane. We love it, Jimbo. I don't know if that would be right. But
James,
I'm
standing back when you do that because they've got like missile-y things in date.
No, not yet. They haven't been put on. They haven't been retrofitted to the plane yet.
Trump's
a plane.
Got like a whole army. Like he bombed Iran halfway around the world. They will find James.
Okay, but then we just wait. We just wait until he's no longer president.
Noted.
Because then he would probably lose all of those army perks and more importantly, in James's case and our case, access to the nuclear codes. Right. I think that's the only real thing we're concerned about. But yes. So again, you bring this up and we laugh about something like this conversation around saying these things around the US, right? But the reality is, we could wake up tomorrow and the United States could say, Jimmy and Simon are persons, persona non grata, persons not welcome in the United States, simply because, according to them, we've said disparaging things or things that don't align
without
with their
shadow
view.
Of a doubt.
Right? So that's the reality of the world that we live in, is that people that have controlled the narrative and the conversation for many, many years have said what they've wanted to say, when they've wanted to say it, and how they've wanted to say it, and the rest of the world is to just take it. And unfortunately, you're coming into an age where Africa's population is younger than the rest of the world's, which means they're going to have more working population, working life, and all of that. Africa has resources and minerals. And if you want to wage a war, this is how it starts, right?
Yeah.
Justification for invasion of countries is...
this goes all the way back to the 100-year wars in the 1800s and stuff, and I mean Hitler and everyone else. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You need
yeah,
some justification to warrant your act of the next step. You can't just take that act without some justification. Yeah. But we're not promoting any wars. We're not suggesting that there's a war on the horizon. We're just saying that it's very easy to sensationalize news and to write things to suit a particular narrative that doesn't necessarily reflect what is happening on the ground. Now, again, we are very conscious of the fact that we actually do have real problems. We're not hiding from those problems, and those problems are serious problems, but we're not collapsing.
We're not collapsing. We're sliding.
We're sliding. It's a gentle slide. Not like the cha-cha slide that you do, but more like a snowboard slide. Like you're sitting on a snowboard. Actually, no. We South Africans, we don't see snow often enough to be able to relate to that. it's kind of that... there it is. It's that slide you do in November when you are looking forward to December.
Dude, I'm already...
When you know what's coming.
I'm already in that slide.
Second half of the year
I can't
slide.
Wait for November.
But yes, that's the kind of slide. It's that slow, steady, easy slide. We're going through that. We do need to, though, look at how we address the slide. Because, again, South Africa's chief strong point, at least from a government point of view, is we've always been amazing and almost unmatched at kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
We do that quite well.
We do. And there's a really good article. In fact, I think it was from the week before last from Natasha Merriman in the Business Day. And she writes, she says two things. Firstly, there was a National Policing Commission. I think it was chaired by Ramaphosa when he was still deputy, which had a whole lot of ideas and zero have been implemented. The second, she says, is that when your top structure is corrupt, they want corrupt police because that just suits their purpose.
Huh. Well, we're seeing that latter part play out. Whether whose purpose it suits or not is another story.
Yeah. And this goes back to Celebi. This goes back to Benalani Nuka and the National Prosecuting Authority, the Scorpions.
Again, we're not perfect. We've got a couple of things we need to address and a couple of things we need to deal with. But for the moment, our markets are holding steady. Ooh, the all share, as I look at our markets, is almost at 100,000 points.
It's a percent away.
It's a percent away. We're at 99,000 or 99,100. It is new all-time highs because last week we closed around 98.6 or 98.7-ish. So we are going to hit 100,000 points, and I wager it's going to happen in this week. It might even happen today.
Mm-hmm.
And that is off the back of global markets also kind of looking a bit iffy. If I look at Asian markets at the moment, the Nikkei's closed today.
Nikkei's closed for Marine Day. I got to say,
Marine Day. Japan
has the best public holidays. Because when I do my show in the morning, I'm always like, and often Nikkei's, there's no data, and I go find what the holiday is. Marine Day, Emperor Day, Green Day, Turin Day, Grandparent Day.
All the days.
Just days, man. Just days for days.
Okay, so we should be more like Japan. The ASX in Sydney was down about 1%. The Hang Seng up about 0.5% at this stage. So yeah, Chinese markets in the green.
Europe flat to slightly down. FTSE
yeah,
up.
That's it.
Germany up. France down. Euro stocks down a little.
We, on the other hand, are loving the stronger palladium and platinum pricing coupled with the stronger gold pricing because our resource counters are through the roof at the moment. But yes, financials also holding their own and industrials also kind of flat, not really doing much. But yes, we might hit all-time highs on the JSE. We're going to leave the conversation on that note. We're going to make it very clear. South Africa is not collapsing. Perhaps someone should look into whether or not the US is collapsing. And we're going to get into our deep dive. Thanks for jumping on to the chat with us. Jimbo's going to hide in his room, not in a bunker. We will send our thoughts and prayers. But until next time, we're going to leave Market Matters on that note. And in our deep dive this week, we are diving into part two of Trump's triple B's, this time from the perspective of the other legislation that went through Congress and the Senate last week. We're talking about the Genius Act, the Clarity Act, and then the third one that couldn't be bothered to be given a proper name, the Anti-CBDC Surveillance State Act. Because, well, you don't get a nice fancy name. Interesting in that these directly speak to digital assets. Digital assets,
yes.
Cryptos, central bank digital currencies, blockchain things, all of that sort of stuff. From a presidency perspective, the fact that you launched a meme coin in your own name at some point clearly means that you are pro digital currencies in some way, shape or form, whether or not that's from a personal view or from an advisory view, or maybe this is Barron's legacy. Who knows? We'll come back to that part of it at another time. But to be able to
come out confidently and say, this is what we want to push through Congress, that's very telling. So yes, the United States has historically been almost the leading voice on all things, I suppose, transactional. If we look at things like the Fed, the US Fed has been one of the leading central banks around the world. That's no doubt there. Is this a play to be a leading voice in digital currencies, or is it something more than that?
It is and it isn't. The Genius Act, which, to be clear, has been signed by Trump, so now is now law.
Maybe not so genius. Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to... No,
but the Donald J. Trump, the J stands for genius. This is around stable coins, and this is actually a fairly good idea because we had that one stable coin blow up a couple of years ago. We've had stable coins which couldn't hold the peg, and this basically says if you want to be a stable coin, you've got to have a full asset backing, you've got to have oversight, you've got to have transparency. So it actually is a good space for stable coins, which is, and it's in a sense, the benefit of stable coins is less maybe for you and me, it's more for cross-border and the like. But truthfully, if a stable coin became, you know, a hip thing, we could use it for transacting in dollars or whatever currency it is. And the key thing is it brings some regulatory process into it, some oversight and everything. That's a really, really good idea. The Anti-CBDC Surveillance State Act basically says the Federal Reserve cannot issue a central bank digital currency without explicit congressional approval because they're worried about privacy surveillance and government control over digital transactions, which in a sense maybe just means I don't quite understand what a CBDC is, a central bank digital currency. It's just basically taking your dollar and saying, I mean, kind of like dollars are digital already.
It could be seen as just building a stable coin of your actual currency.
Correct.
Because you'd have the assets to back it.
The point being is that if the government did it, then what's the benefit of all these stable coin peeps? Yeah, like why would you go and buy another USDC or something when you could go and buy the Federal Reserve one, which is backed up by the might of the American government?
But all of the stable coins at the moment, or at least most of the stable coins at the moment, are pegged against the US dollar anyway.
Correct.
So if you are then to say you are not allowed to have your own coin or you're not allowed to have your own digital currency, then why then do we have them pegged against a dollar that...
Difference between you doing it as a private person and government. Remember, the Republicans are terrified of government. I know they are government, but... But there's a fun thing in the Genius Act is that the stable coins are not allowed to, so they need to be in dollars or short-dated treasuries. Or they cannot pay interest. By law, they cannot pay interest.
Okay.
Which means this is a nice little business to get into, right? Because you could put your money in a bank in America and earn, I don't know, 2%, and your stable coin doesn't earn 2%, so you're just basically creaming that 2%.
That, okay, well, I suppose the not interest component is to protect the banks themselves. I see that as a protection from the bank, because if I then have the option of saying I've got two things, one of them is going to pay, if both of them pay me interest, and stable coins feed into the whole decentralization narrative, we want to move away from banks, banks hoard people's money and all of that, that is anti-bank. So I wouldn't be surprised if the banks are on board with saying, hey, stable coins shouldn't pay interest because then we can keep depositors' monies in the bank and then we have money to lend.
Sure, except you've already got federal deposit insurance, which you don't get with stable coins. And after we saw Silicon Valley Bank go bust, was it last year? I think it was last year.
Yeah,
and basically the limit, which I think was $150,000 or $250,000, is just out the window. The Fed now, much like our Reserve Bank, sort of implicitly, although we've gotten our deposit insurance up to $100,000, and that's what our Senate governor always sort of stepped up for. Mm. And then the Clarity Act, which is trying to add clarity to who oversees which parts of crypto. And they seem to be splitting it between the Securities Exchange Commission, SEC, which would be involved, as I understand, in the marketing and the like of crypto, and then the CFTC, which is Chicago Futures...
Trading
Commission.
Yes.
Who would then oversee the brokers, dealers, etc. So kind of like trying to say, who looks after which parts? Who looks after the brokers and the dealers, etc.? And who looks after the actual issuances? And I think it's the other way around. I think the SEC does brokers, dealers, and the like, and the Commodities Exchange.
So it would be the JSE and the FSCA, or the FSCA and the Reserve Bank, where it relates to currencies. So it's fine to have that distinction. Sure. I just want to take a bit of a side quest here, because I couldn't help but think about it when you said it. The Clarity Act, aimed at providing clarity, reminded me of a skit done by a British comedian, Michael McIntyre, who says that in America, you have to name things after what they mean because you need to be that specific. So the rest of the world calls it a pavement, but America calls it a sidewalk. So you know where it is.
It's on You've the seen... side and you walk on it.
So the Clarity Act kind of makes sense that you kind of need to provide specific clarity around what it is you want to clarify. But yes, we digress. In the US, that then means that from a governance perspective, this is providing more clarity and more certainty towards stable coins, cryptos, and the like. And therefore, I suppose the likes of your BlackRocks and that would then have better security around how their ETFs are being governed, mm-hmm. managed, all of those sorts of mm-hmm. things. And at the end of the day, I mean, if you look at where Bitcoin and all other cryptos are at the moment, when the institutional money started getting involved and you started having all of that come into effect, we knew that this was inevitable at some point because of the structures that are in place within the SEC. And for me, this just makes it seem as though this is now going to be another controlled asset. We pitched cryptos and all of this as decentralized, away from
lawlessness,
control, lawlessness, anonymous, all of those sorts of things.
None of it was really true.
But the more we look at it, the more controlled it's going to be. And if you are this controlled, then perhaps our stock pick then in our Investor Insights very easily becomes MicroStrategy, because Michael Saylor, owning more than 200,000 Bitcoin, has beefed up that balance sheet to look phenomenal at the moment.
Yeah, so I think he owns more than I just strategy.
I think if I'm not mistaken, MicroStrategy owns more Bitcoin than the Fed themselves.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think it's 600,000 now.
Is it?
Yeah, the problem is...
Oh, no, I think he might have purchased 200,000 recently.
597,000, although I think that's a little bit out of date. This only goes to June 30, so I think it's a little out of date. So he owns 2.7% of total supply at this point. The trick is that you're paying a significant premium for strategy. Why not just go buy a Bitcoin? And I was chirping with David Massey on the Twitters around these whole Bitcoin treasury companies, of which Altvest and Strategy are two. Although, to be clear, opposite ends. Altvest has one, Strategy has 600,000. If you believe in the idea of BTC, Bitcoin treasury companies, why don't you go and buy a Bitcoin? And he's like, yeah, but you can, but companies, it's more complex. And he talked about a Vortex and stuff like that, which got a little bit gibberishy. I have invited him onto the show. The point being is, the Strategy is trading at about a 45% premium to the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, but
so go buy a Bitcoin.
You can, but that's as a normal consumer, right? So I don't see it from a consumer play as what is happening here, right? So I see it as Michael Saylor setting up to be bought out by a BlackRock. Because as a BlackRock, if I then go into the market to go and buy 200,000 Bitcoin, it's going to shoot up the price of Bitcoin. Whereas if I buy the shares of MicroStrategy at a premium of 20, 30, even 40%, it costs me less than the premium I'd have to pay if I shot up the price of Bitcoin. And I get all 600,000 at the end of it. I'm buying a balance sheet, right? That's the long-term play.
Yeah. I don't know. That's sort of, I mean, I appreciate that. It seems like a lot to get it. But I mean,
it is, but if you want to control a market, remember, you just said he's got 2.7% of supply. If we continue to buy up whatever we're buying up as investors, as asset managers, as institutional funds or whatever, there's going to come a time where all of supply is bought out. And then your move is to then have as much of that supply as possible to secure yourself, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to have that valued asset on your balance sheet. And then the play is to just buy the MicroStrategy. Now, MicroStrategy is listed, but that's never stopped BlackRock before.
Yeah. There are. So, I mean, there's others that hold 50,000, 37,000, 12,000, 10,000.
And you can buy all of those up at a much cheaper price, I suppose. But if you want 600,000 Bitcoin, what do? Do you buy 600,000 Bitcoin in the market, or do you just buy a company?
You would push the price way more. Okay. Although there have been some whales selling, but I take your point. Okay.
Well, selling is always taking profit at the right levels. I mean, if you bought Bitcoin even at 50,000 and we're at 120,000, you've doubled your money.
Yeah, these are whales that were buying sub 1,000.
Right. So at sub 1,000, at 120,000, you're churning out, even if I saw a whale that sold around 80,000 Bitcoin. And so you're churning out an excessive amount of money from that perspective as a return. And depending on where you are in the world, that return could be tax-free. depending on where you are in the world, right?
Well, IRS has been gutted, so they can't track it. Because to be clear, Bitcoin isn't as anonymous as many thought. I mean, I know the FBI has a map on a wall, and as they're tagging names, they're putting names to blockchains.
I can see that. I can see that happening. Mm. So we've gone through the Genius Act by Donald Genius Trump. Mm-hmm. We've gone through the Clarity Act, and we've gone through the one that couldn't be bothered to be named, the Anti-CBDC Surveillance State Act. These are clearly three pieces of legislation that aim to shape how digital currencies dealt with or digital transactions happen in the US. Do we think the rest of the world will follow?
To a degree, yes. I mean, in some ways, the rest of the world is ahead of them. South Africa, we've already got some regulations coming out of FSCA and SARB and the like. I mean, yes, it is a wild west out there, and it's becoming sort of less wildish and maybe even less westish, but certainly becoming less wild. And this is part of that process. And it goes back to your earlier point. You know, Bitcoin, in the early days, it was Bitcoin and Silk Road. Why did you have Bitcoin? Because you wanted to buy drugs, do crime, or that was basically, you know, you couldn't do anything else with it, put it this way. Mm. And that's changing, and it's coming into the regulatory field, which is in many ways antagonist to the sort of anarchy idea of Bitcoin, but park that aside anyways. Mm. This is, I think it's good for the asset class, crypto. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for America. We can debate some of the nuances, but as a concept, I mean, regulating stable coins. Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, of course. That's like, I mean, where was Biden asleep?
I don't know if Biden was asleep or even present at the time, or even if he heard what was being said. The gentleman has been around for quite some time. Anyone that has been a senator longer than most people have been alive
that's a good
just,
point.
You know? And I want to get that actually, because that was such an interesting, when I saw that, right? I saw how long Joe Biden had been a senator for. He'd served as a senator from Delaware for 36 years before the 2008 election of him as vice president.
Then he spent 8 years in the White House as deputy, and then 4 years as president. So that's another 12. That's 48. 36 plus 12.
Well, 50 if we count. 50 if we count a couple of.
If you're really, really bad at arithmetic.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of years in between there. I'm sure he's been in the Senate.
How old are you?
In the Senate from 1973. How many people were born in 1973? Other than you, Si. Other than you, Si. We celebrated your Rec 28. We know
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
But imagine having seen that much of US Congress. Mm. Surely he was tired by the time we got to discussing things like crypto. Like, no, I'm too tired for this. Mm. I've seen too many things. Mm. I've seen 9/11. Mm. Which, again, another conversation for another day. But yes, I got sidetracked around the point on the point of when you've gone through all of this stuff. I look at these new developments, and perhaps it's a bit cynical, but the way I start to look at them these days is who stands to benefit from it? Who stands to gain from it? Because what I've come to realize is laws are seldom passed for the good of the people. They're passed for the good of those that want those laws to be passed, but seldom for the good of the majority of the people. Mm. And I bring that up not to be cynical or anything, but to be alive to the fact that someone has a vested interest in seeing these laws go through in the manner in which they go through, right? And you and I can definitely agree that that person might not necessarily be Orange Mussolini, but it could very well be Larry Fink.
Mm, well, yeah. And in fact, the Clarity Act, I'd misread it, is more about shifting the oversight from the SEC to the Commodities Future Trading Commission, which is viewed as being more friendly to crypto, which is, again, weird because laws, I mean, the chair of the SEC, who's been appointed by Trump because the other one stepped down on the 19th of Jan, laws shouldn't be written about who's in power at any one particular point. But that boat sailed with Moby Dick. Like,
gone.
It is gone. It is absolutely gone. And it's gone to the Senate, but still to be passed.
Likely to be passed because we know President Trump at the moment has been passing a lot of these things. And unless
And they've got Senate, what, they're 52-48.
Yeah, so. And unless it's one, well, you did kind of remove a couple of the Democrats that may or may not be able to.
That's Congress. The dead ones.
Yeah, yes.
That's the House.
That's the Congress. Okay, we're going to leave the conversation on that note. That's the deep dive. And we're going to get into investor insights. We're going to take a look at some earnings numbers. We're going to take a look at some other developments. And we're going to see what we make of it. But that's the deep dive. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights. We're taking a look at the fact that the South African budget could still not be passed. And we're going to see if we can add a stock pick to the wall. But we don't know if we're going to have time for that, because the news that we might not have a budget after three budget attempts, three budget speeches.
Two votes.
How do we still not have a budget?
So I'm not quite sure, to be honest. Both practically and theoretically, I'm not quite sure. As I understand it, we voted for the big budget, and then it breaks down to little budgets.
To
departments.
Okay.
And the DA has said, post the firing of Whitfield,
yes,
that they would not vote for departmental budgets that are headed by
ministers who are compromised, or whatever it is you want to call them. Blah, blah, blah. Right.
So, but then if we don't get the little budgets that feed into the big budget, then do we have a budget? Now, to be clear, the DA is just a minority party. I mean, they were minority parties. You know,
the ANC.
You can pass it without them. The ANC needs, you know, 8 or 9%. 9%, and they can get it passed.
Well, 10 if they're in 40.
Yeah. So they can get it.
They can wrangle 10%, I suppose, out of the other, 40% that's sitting out there in the market.
Because if we take...
Because DA is 20%, they're 40.
DA is 20, 16 to NK, 6 is 32, 40 to their space. They can pass it.
EFF's got 9-ish or so.
EFF and MK are never coming to the rescue of the ANC, but all the other parties...
Well, it depends on what you put on the table.
Well, it depends what the rescue is, yes. Mm-hmm. So, and this is Quinta Hunter writing in News 24 and saying, you know, if this thing, like if you don't get the budget through and the vote is all happening Wednesday, it kind of falls apart because then you don't have your big budget. And as per the way our constitution and our budgeting process works, come end of July, if you don't have a budget, you go back to last year's budget with 45% of the spend.
So sorry, 10 days from now is what you're saying, come end of July. So we have 10 days to get people on the same page that haven't been able to get onto the same page for 4 months to discuss budgets when, again, as Quinta quite rightly points out in the article, that a government of national unity, or at least a whatever coalition, exists for two purposes. Purpose one, to elect a president. Purpose two, to pass a budget. Everything else is semantics. Yeah. Who gets what portfolio? Yeah. All of those things become semantics. Mm-hmm. Without a budget, so we know how much we're spending as a country, and without direction coming from the leadership, the president will then obviously nominate his cabinet and that will govern leadership and all of that. So without those two critical things, there's no point of having a government. So you've gotten one done. You might not be happy about it. You might not be happy about who you've chosen as the president to whatever end it is. The second part of what you need to get done is to get a budget approved, and you're not doing that. Why then do you exist?
Yeah. So why? And it does mean that the government of national unity is just not there.
Okay.
And there's an important point, and Quinta makes it as well, you know, there are 12 cabinet posts that could go to others. And the ANC, one of the things that they have done is used cabinet posts as
bargaining chips.
Yeah, bargaining chips.
Horse trading.
Or carrot stick. Reward.
That's it.
And when you lose 12, it's like there's 12 people you can't reward.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So...
Yeah, I mean, that Oku wrote the Max Oku, wrote the Wall Street Journal story, missed the story, didn't he?
Clearly. The collapse of the budget is a bigger story. So we've got 10 days to figure this out. We've got a budget vote happening on Wednesday. I imagine if nothing happens on Wednesday, we will call for emergency votes by next week, Wednesday as well, so that we can get this thing over the line. The ANC's already made it clear, I'm sure that they have, that they're going to start lobbying other parties so that they're not reliant and dependent on the DA to pass this. But the reality is it puts the South African budget in jeopardy, which puts South Africans in jeopardy. And all we need is for people to just get on the same page about this sort of thing. Now, whether that's decisive leadership and saying, okay, we must fire the ministers that are contentious, but then you have an awkward situation where now you're just going to fire ministers whenever the DA says you must. So yeah, politics, this is why politics and budgets should be kept separately.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Economists, accountants, finance people, business people, you guys handle the budgets. Politicians, you handle the politics.
Yeah,
simple solutions.
They can get it without the EFF, MK, and DA if they have to, but it's going to be
a stretch.
That's 44 and change.
It's going to be a stretch.
So you need to be very friendly to people such as the Al-Jamar and
PSC. But you're already friendly with those sorts of parties. So I suspect that the closest you're going to get is to, if you're going to isolate a DA and an MK, your EFF really stands as your only remaining option to push you over the line.
Yeah.
which would be very interesting to see. Not the dynamic we want to play out. Hopefully there is a resolution towards this. Those that are in Parliament that want help, please, we're happy to... Let's just get this thing done. I'm tired of having a budget conversation. We have a budget conversation. It's July. October is the midterm budget policy statement. We are halfway towards the next budget speech that we're supposed to have, and we haven't even solved the first one.
Correct.
Okay, please, can we get a resolution towards this? Let's move on to our stock pick, ASML.
Like it, so I hold it.
Maybe
I think it's
that's
really
our
great.
Stock pick. I don't think we've put ASML anyway.
The results were good, really good. Mm. The outlook, not so much.
Mm.
And I get that in the current world environment. But the short answer is that they own tech that no one else has, which is the ultraviolet lithograph stuff, which is what you need for sort of 3 and 4 nanometer chips, etc. And if you want to make those chips, like you got to go knock on their door in the Netherlands. Like there's no other way to do it. And as I said, their outlook was quite weak. And we get that sanctions, worries, inflation. I mean, all of that, you know, tariffs, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, let's look 5 or 10 years later down the line. Are there going to be more chips being produced?
Yes.
Hell yeah. A, because demand, but B, also because what the pandemic taught us and what these trade tensions are teaching us, tensions, my foot, tariffs, wars. What they're teaching us is that you want to onshore. America wants to make chips in America. TSMC's just recently built factories both in America and in Germany so that Europe and America can have, you know, in case Taiwan ever gets
into it. They're fit. They're full of
and
chips.
ASML comes in and says, well, you want to build that? You got to phone us.
You still have to come to us.
You have to
phone
them.
And I don't see a company like ASML giving up their intellectual property, giving
so fun
up
fact,
their
it,
market
it
edge.
Came out of DARPA, that defense thing in America, which is where the internet and so much else came out of, and no one could make it work. The tech was there. No one could make it work. And these little Dutch guys made it to work and got the rights for it.
So the Dutch guys, that's again, now we're back to the conversation that we had around MicroStrategy and concentration risk. You're the only one in the market. You are a concentration risk, but this is the good kind of concentration risk that you want to be because you're a market leader, market dominator, you're a monopoly, and you therefore control a certain aspect of the market. And if we're looking at plays that make a lot of sense from the perspective of market dominance and those sorts of things, ASML sits quite rightly there. Now, whether or not I agree with a 630 euro valuation is relative because at some point we're above 700 euros on the share price. And at some point we were at 500 euros on the share price. So at the moment, I'm liking it down to the 600 euro level. I think it's an interesting level that we could see. There's a 400 euro retest from just coming out of the pandemic. Pandemic lows are around 200 euros. I like ASML.
I like them too. Absolutely.
Do we like it enough for it to be blue chip?
I never even noticed there was a euro version. I always look at the US version.
Well, I assume it's euros because it's the NV trading in the Netherlands.
No, there is an ASML Europe as well. Because you mentioned these levels and I'm like, I don't see these on my chart.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on the chart here. It kind of looks like you're coming down to a good level, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's looking, the chart looks the same as it does broadly in the dollars. Yeah, I mean, I like it. And I take your point. I mean, it does look like we can pick it up lower or one could pick it up lower. I picked it up at around 600 and then it dropped to 5 and then it went to 7 and I was all clever and now it's 630.
Now you're in between.
I'm a third as clever as I was. But I like it. Is it blue chip? Look, I mean, as definitions of blue chip, things such as moats, such as extremely advanced, you know, there's no direct real competition to
there
them.
Isn't.
I mean,
there isn't an alternative. There isn't a threat to the business. And if we're saying we're going to deal with the collapse of an ASML, then we have to contend with that being a collapse of an NVIDIA, a collapse of everybody that has invested
TSMC,
into
probably
exactly
AMD.
Precisely. A collapse of artificial intelligence as a whole because they run on chipsets, all these AI large language learning models and all of those sorts of things. So the reality is it's in a stable market, a market that is set to grow, and you have no competitor, or you have very little competitors that can compete at scale. For me, that's blue chip right there.
Sure. Okay. Blue chip it is.
There we go. Blue chip it is. We're going to add ASML. That's what we're going to add to the wall, and that's where we're going to leave that conversation. Before we go, this week's Unfiltered Opinion is partly to do with the conversation we had in our Investor Insights around the budget, and it is that some of our government departments are looking to have cashless services. So remove cash services and be completely cashless. And they are pitching this as a progressive move forward, right? One such example is the Department of Home Affairs that wants to do everything cashless from a licensing perspective and all sorts of things there and everything there. Happy days. Lovely. I don't know if that is a possibility. And I bring that up from a very simple perspective as a South African. If you look at the South Africans that are on social grants, how many of those South Africans, when the social grant hits their bank account, do they go and take it out of the bank to hold it in cash rather than leaving it in the bank because there's a mistrust towards banks?
And just 100%. I mean, I chatted with, who did I talk to? Israel from Bank South Africa, talking around the whole sort of cashless, what are they, the payment rails, digital payments, et cetera, et cetera. All very lovely and all. But I got to say, I'm not, my sister-in-law uses a government health department. She doesn't have a credit card.
Think about the size of the informal sector. I had a conversation with the South African Spaza and Tuck Shop Association.
Israel Suskana, that's us.
Ah. I had a conversation last week with the South African Spaza and Tuck Shop Association around their wanting to move for a, they wanted to stop the government from imposing a ban on the selling of loose cigarettes, right? Yes.
Which I thought was already banned, but turned out I was wrong.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting because it gives you a very clear perspective of the fact that the informal economy still deals with different challenges to what the formal economy deals with. And that alone should tell you that unless you're catering for everybody in the economy, you're going to exclude some people from the economy. Imagine, I mean, something as simple as someone buying a Starbucks in a cashless world. That's a luxury for many people. Now to say to these people, you have to go renew your ID. You have to have a bank account to renew your ID because we don't accept cash in a country where there's a large population that remains unbanked and on a continent that remains unbanked, I think is a pipe dream. So solve your banking issues, make sure everybody's banked, solve those problems first before you want to move us to a cashless society. That's the Unfiltered Opinion. That's the conversation. We're going to leave it on that note. Like, follow, subscribe, share your opinions, give us your thoughts around our Unfiltered Opinion. But until next time, best of the heart, first try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.